Hi, this is Dr. Linda Mental. Hey, thanks for listening to the podcast of the Dr. Linda Mental Show. Our website is filled with more encouraging interviews, all accessible at myfaithradio.com.
This is the Dr. Linda Mental Show.
And welcome to the Dr. Linda Mental Show. I'm your host, Dr. Linda Mental, the relationship doctor, along with my co-host, who's not actually here today. We have a special program for you. We have a special guest who is going to talk on the topic of sleep today. So I hope you will stay awake and get your coffee and enjoy this program. Every week we are here doing life together with you, and we're just so glad that you have joined us. Well, I just mentioned that we have a special guest. His name is Dr. Anthony Panettiere. He's a physician who is a sleep expert. Some of you may not have known that there is such a thing as a sleep expert. We'll ask him what that means and what he does. Does he watch people sleep, or what does he do to figure out what happens in sleep? Tony is a part of the National Intrepid Center of Excellence that is based in Bethesda, Maryland. He is a neurologist, a board-trained neurologist, and sleep medicine physician working as a member of what is a unique medical model multidisciplinary team that focuses on helping our active duty soldiers when they come off of combat with traumatic brain injury, post-traumatic stress disorder. You may have heard of those two things. But basically what he's doing is he's helping our soldiers when they come back. They come back to a place called the Fisher House, which is where he practices medicine at this point. And so he's done a lot of other things. He's been in neurology for years and years and years. He's been a staff neurologist who also headed the sleep laboratory. He's done fellowships at Stanford and Duke. So welcome, Dr. Panettiere.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So, you know, the first thing people are going to wonder is, like, what do you do as a sleep person?
Right. That's that comes up at times. So our training is to be, you can come into sleep from various directions. Sometimes pulmonologists will do it, sometimes neurologists, sometimes psychiatrists. I came at it from the neurology standpoint, and all of those disciplines have some impact on the sleep field. So we train, my training at Stanford initially in the 90s, and then did a longer program at Duke in 2004 to 2005. And it was basically to just understand the various sleep disorders, to get thorough histories from patients in their evaluation, and then to, when necessary, study them in the sleep laboratory where they would spend a night sleeping with various sensors and electrodes attached to their body to give us more information about the nature of what is disrupting their sleep quality or their ability to stay asleep.
So you're watching people sleep. That's part of your job.
A technician is doing that, actually.
You're not watching them all night, so you're not staying up all night, not getting sleep.
That's exactly right.
So the biggest, the first question that people ask, and they ask me this all the time when I'm talking to people, is just how many hours a night of sleep do people need in order to function well during the day?
Well, that is independent. For an adult, we require 5 sleep cycles. A sleep cycle on average is about 90 minutes, and 90 minutes times 5 sleep cycles would be about 7.5 hours. Now, sometimes the sleep cycle is a little longer, a little shorter, and that's why some people can feel well after, say, 6, 6.5 hours, and other people will need 9 or 10. And so the way to know that is to, say, take a vacation that you don't schedule out, and by about day 4, that amount of sleep that you got spontaneously, where you didn't have anything scheduled to get up for, is probably about what you personally need to feel fully rested. To me, a good sleeper is someone who usually routinely beats the alarm clock, it wakes up feeling generally refreshed, has no tendency to fall asleep during the day, and is physically and mentally alert throughout the day. So that's sort of the ideal amount, the ideal way to recognize someone who's sleeping pretty well.
So for the average adult, we're talking about maybe somewhere between 6 and 7 hours, maybe 8 hours of sleep.
Yeah, probably more like 7.5, plus or minus 30 minutes.
I was kind of going for the 6 because that's where I think that's where I fall. Now, what about children? Because children need a whole lot more sleep than adults do, don't they?
They need more. And generally what happens is, as you can see in babies, newborns need 20 hours of sleep, which is usually gotten in multiple segments through the day. And then as they reach first, second grade, then the child will need to sleep in 2 segments, obviously at night, and then they need a nap and schools are set up for that. And then we'll consolidate our sleep generally as adults, where we sleep in one period at night. But as we grow older into the elder years, generally you fall back into sort of that of a toddler, where you'll have a tendency to need to nap in the day and then sleep at night, and have a tendency to fall asleep extra early at night and wake up maybe extra early in the morning, which is a little bit disruptive for daytime activities.
Yeah, I know. My dad, you know, is 94 and a half years old. And I know that sometimes he wakes up very early in the morning, and he doesn't want to wake up that early because there's really nothing to do at right. that time. So he's a little bit frustrated. He says, sometimes I'll just lay there in the bed and I'll try to make myself go back to sleep. But he's pretty alert at that point.
Right.
So that's, you're saying that's kind of a normal progression
it's
when
normal.
You get older.
Right. Yeah.
And a lot of times I have heard, now I don't know if this is true, I've heard that children need about 10 hours of sleep a night. Would you say that's about right?
Or? Yeah, young children do, up until probably they're about 7 or 8, need at least that much. And then and it depends a lot how active they are in the day. You know, as children tend to gravitate more toward video games and watch TV instead of playing outside, it tends to lower their affect their sleep requirement a little bit, and also makes it harder to fall asleep at night. So I'm still about kids going out to play part of the day and get that party, and even if they like to play on the videos.
So that really helps their sleep. In addition
Absolutely.
To, it obviously helps them with childhood obesity
Absolutely.
And other areas of their life. So
Absolutely.
What about teenagers? Because, again, people think, it seems like teenagers sleep 20 hours a day like babies, but
right,
I'm sure that's
right.
not accurate.
Well, what happens is, as you go through the teen years, is you develop, for most teenagers, develop a delayed sleep phase syndrome. So that means that they become sort of night owls. Whether they were before that or not, that's sort of how they progress. So they just are, frankly, not that tired at 10, 11 midnight, and they'll have a tendency to stay awake, and of course they have to get up for school in the morning, still needing, you know, 8-9 hours of sleep perhaps, and so they end up dragging them out of the bed. They're sluggish in the morning. They're not attentive for their early classes if they're in school. And so some schools have adopted a new program where they actually start school later, finish school later, to account for the normal physiology that happens. So often tell parents of teenagers to not be too hard on them about their inability to fall asleep, you know, early as the parents do, just because it's not something their physiology
their bodies,
really allows
yeah.
for.
Well, I read something a long time ago because we both had teenagers and mm-hmm. still have teenagers. You do.
Yeah.
I'm out of the teenage phase, but. Yeah. I know that there was something I read that said they actually cannot fall asleep before like 10 o'clock at night, that is really tough. So it is kind of backwards, isn't it, the way our school system has been set up. You look at some of these programs where these kids have to be on the buses, especially if they're going across town or they're driving to a school that isn't right in their neighborhood. Some of these kids have to get up at like 6:45, which if you've ever had a teenager, they'll tell you that's an unnatural act.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something to that.
Absolutely. And in Montgomery County, Maryland, where I practice and live, there's been a push by educators to allow the school to just open a half an hour later, which doesn't seem to be that big a deal. And people will call in on radio talk shows and say, no, the approach is you just kind of, you know, whip your kid to wake up and coerce them to, you know, force them to go to bed. And again, I always tell people the only thing you control is waking up. You do not control falling asleep at any age. And so you cannot make somebody fall asleep unless they're ready to fall asleep on their own already. So it really isn't. I mean, there certainly can be some behavioral things we can talk about that will tend to promote insomnia and keep people awake, which we dissuade people from doing. But in general, if it's just simply they're doing all the right things, they may not be physiologically sleepy at the customary time.
So it would be a good idea for those schools to pay attention to that. I think, too, because of the alertness of their brain. So you wonder mm-hmm. what's going on with their grades at that time in the morning. I remember in college I had a 7:30 in the morning world history class.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you one thing that I probably learned in that hour. So it's a tough time to have a class for students. So
Absolutely.
We've kind of got it backwards based on our chemistry and our bodies, our physical bodies. Well, I would like to talk a little bit about, why don't we just talk about some of those things that create insomnia? And we may need to go into a break while we're doing this. But mm-hmm. what are some of those things that keep people from falling asleep?
Well, I always tell my patients that their normal biological clock is actually not 24 hours, it's actually 24 and a half hours. So you have to physically do things to bring you back inside of a 24-hour period. And generally that's going to be establishing a certain wake up every day. Most people 6-7 o'clock in the morning is what they would do.
Is that important to get into a rhythm
get
of
into
that?
A rhythm, absolutely, because your physiological alertness period is about 16 hours. So if you woke up at 6 a.m. and you're otherwise a pretty good sleeper, you'll be physiologically sleepy about 10. So that will help promote that, because melatonin is released about 14 hours after you're awakened, which is what is a hormone your brain will naturally make. You don't necessarily need to take supplements that will promote sleep. And generally that has been released around 8 o'clock in the evening to allow you to be asleep by about 10.
Okay, well, stay with us. We're going to take a brief break. We're going to talk about the things that you can do, that you do that create insomnia, and things that you probably don't want to do to prevent yourself from falling asleep. We'll be back in a moment.
Conflict is normal, but how you handle it matters. Are you an avoider, reactor, or a negotiator? In her new book, We Need to Talk, Dr. Mental helps you understand your personal approach to conflict. If you want to build and maintain stronger relationships despite conflict, We Need to Talk is a place to start. Dr. Linda Mental's new book will help you learn how to successfully navigate relationship conflict. Available online and in bookstores now.
Learn more about Dr. Linda's book by visiting drlindahelps.com, drlindahelps.com.
We need to talk.
Here we go again.
I'm in trouble.
Uh-oh, something's wrong.
This is gonna be a long night.
Oh no, not again. What did I do this time?
We need to talk. Four words that can stop a conversation and grip us with anxiety. Let's be honest. These words usually mean something is wrong, and we are about to go into the world of feelings, a place not everyone likes to visit. If you are smart, you won't begin a conversation with these four words. The phrase, we need to talk, puts most of us on the defensive. We need to talk takes time and energy. It can be exhausting and doesn't always end with a quick fix. But the idea behind we need to talk is important to making our relationships work. It's our cue that something needs to be addressed.
Dr. Linda Mental's latest book, We Need to Talk, is available now in bookstores everywhere, or visit her online at drlindahelps.com, drlindahelps.com.
Hey, it's Dr. Linda Mental from the Dr. Linda Mental Radio Show, here on Saturday at 10:30 a.m. on Faith Radio. Join the conversation for our shows by commenting on questions and show topics posted on social media. Go to myfaithradio.com, click on my show, and leave your comments in the comment box. Or click on one of the social media icons and leave your comments on Facebook or Twitter. We'd love to hear from you. Well, welcome back to the Dr. Linda Mental Show, where today we have a special guest, Dr. Tony Panettiere, who is here, who is a sleep expert. And we're talking about the necessity for getting a good night's rest. I think a lot of people, Dr. Panettiere, don't realize that, you know, I've been talking about if you want to have a great diet, get good sleep, because it does help you prevent obesity. So there's a lot of benefits to sleep that people don't recognize. We'll go through some of those in a minute. But before the break, we were talking about what prevents people from getting adequate sleep and actually falling asleep at night. So can you give us some ideas about that and some tips?
Sure, absolutely. I think, as I mentioned in the last segment, having a regular wake-up time is very important. And even on weekends, I tell people not to slide their sleep much more than 90 minutes. So if you get up at 6 on the weekdays, no more than 7:30 during the weekends.
Okay, my husband does not do that.
Right.
I am amazed that he can. I'm like what you talk about. Like, I wake up at 6:15 every morning, and on Saturdays and Sundays, I'm wide awake, even though I don't need to be. But I tell you, my husband can sleep till noon if I wouldn't wake him up.
Well, the average American runs about an hour in the hole every night. So by
come
Friday night, you are one night down from sleep.
Whoa, can you make that up? So the question is, can you get more sleep and make it up?
To a degree, and people have tried to do that. They do feel better doing it. The problem is that, for instance, since you wake up at noon, again, referencing back to my 16 hours of alertness, that means then you will not be able to fall asleep physiologically until, say, 3 or 4 in the morning the next morning. And if you get up for church or other morning activities, then it's going to be very hard to do that. Again, people tend to slide it again and get 8 hours on, say, Saturday into Sunday morning. And now they're waking up at noon again, and then they can't fall asleep Sunday night. So that's partly why Mondays are so hard on people. They are sleep deprived. They sort of rested from the weekend to some degree, but they never fully recover and once the week starts up again. So it's really important to guard your sleep. Sleep has to be a priority for most people with their stresses of their job and their family. They think they can sacrifice on the sleep. And to a degree, for a short time, you can. Maybe for a night here or there, you have to be up with a sick child, let's say. But generally, you want to get back on track with doing that.
So the first tip would be really to have a consistent time where you go to bed and you wake up and try to get your body into that consistent rhythm.
Absolutely. Much like eating. You know, you would like to eat about the same amount every time as opposed to starve for 2 days and then binge eat at a buffet.
Yeah. Yeah.
You wouldn't want to do that.
So it's the same type of idea. Okay, right. So that's one thing we can do is we can change our sleep routine. Right. So what are some of the other things that prevent people from falling asleep at night?
So the other is most people should have a way to buffer from the busyness of the day to allow their brain to sort of ramp down to allow them to feel sleepy. So if you were trying to fall asleep at 10 o'clock at night, I would tell people around 9 o'clock, start pushing away any of the work you might have brought home. If you're watching TV, I pull away from light sources, which blue light in particular will suppress melatonin, which again is designed to naturally help promote you to be sleepy.
So when you have the light on, just so those of us who are not physicians understand, when you have the light on, it's not helping you with that melatonin. It's not helping you get sleepy.
Only released in dim light.
So that's TV. So a lot of people fall asleep with the television on.
They do. Sometimes it's for background noise. So if they're not looking at it and they're sort of turned away from it, they just want some noise, then that particularly if you have ringing in your ears or something like that, you might want to have some background noise.
So turn off the TV might be a good idea.
Computer,
any light, the phone.
And certainly a lot of my service members like to play war games on their phone. They'll do that before bed. So, you know, it's fairly activating to do that.
Yeah.
And then I always tell people that every day they should try to exercise. Some days you may be able to work out pretty hard. Other days, if you're pressed, at least walk for 20 minutes, something to expend some energy to pull that body back inside of a 24-hour cycle.
Now, what about exercising at night? Because sometimes people go at 8 o'clock at night to the gym, and then it's hard to fall asleep, isn't it?
Right. Well, it can be. Usually, we don't like people to work out inside of 2 hours before their desired bedtime.
Okay.
So I would say if you're hoping to be asleep by 10, if you worked out from 8 to 9, you're going to have a little difficulty falling asleep because it does tend to raise your adrenaline levels up. It is a controlled stress, but a stress nevertheless. So it tends to make it hard to fall asleep.
Okay. So exercise during the day. Not too late before you're going to bed.
Right.
So don't do 100 sit-ups right before you're ready to go to sleep.
Right.
Okay.
Doesn't help.
Okay. What's another tip that we...
I always say also that, as the Bible sort of says, don't let the sun go down on your anger. So if you have unprocessed or incompletely processed feelings or anger or issues with other people, try to settle those before you try to go to bed. The tendency is that in the quietness of your bedroom, your brain will want to replay that out again. Those ruminations will make it difficult as you're trying to fall asleep to settle down and fall asleep. So one way to do that is either have the conversation with the person you have offense with, or if it's a bigger issue than that, journal a little bit about in that, say, 9 to 10 window. Just write down things that are troubling you, how you're feeling, things you have to do, which sort of helps you to process it and conceptually take it out of your brain, lays it in the book. The book is only for you to look at, and then you deal with it tomorrow when you're better rested.
That's interesting, because that's a strategy that we use for worry and anxiety, where because it's going around and around and around in the brain. And so we tell people to do that very thing, to make some notes, write down what their worries are, you know, actually schedule a time, write them down and put them somewhere, pray over them and then put them somewhere just to try to deposit them out of the brain. I mean, that's what we're talking about doing. So
Absolutely.
That's a really good idea for sleep. So that's a really good incentive also for dealing with problems when they come up and not letting them go round and round in your brain, because it's going to continue to keep you more alert.
And we always say that when there's a significant emotional trauma in someone's life, if they don't adequately process it, either with the offending or involved people or with a trained psychologist or psychiatrist, it will leak out somewhere. It often leaks out in your attempt to sleep.
Well, a lot of people will say, you know, I put my head down and then I'm just replaying. It's like the running brain, you know, it's on autopilot, and it feels like you can't shut off the issues of the day.
Right.
And so that's one of the issues for people sleeping. We have these mindfulness techniques that we use with people, or prayer, which I think is the best mindfulness technique, mm-hmm. is that people praying at night. And even I've even had people just say the name of Jesus mm-hmm. when they've really been upset by something. They mm-hmm. can't seem to calm themselves down. I'll just have them focus on the name of Jesus. And, mm-hmm. you know, you and I know, and I know you're a believer, mm-hmm. that there's power in the name of Jesus.
Absolutely.
So not only right. just as a distraction technique, right. but the power of the name of Jesus is enough to transform that moment
Absolutely.
And bring us to what we would consider to be a true rest yeah. in Him. So I think scripturally that's a way to rest in Him, is to power down the mind
Absolutely.
And to focus yeah. on Him and who He is to help you relieve that anxiety.
Well, and the thing is that the tendency is to focus on sleep is what most people do, which is very yeah. activating. So you can't really tell people to not focus on that. You have to just displace it with something that's more helpful, like
yeah.
praying and focusing on God.
Yeah, we have a saying that says, what you resist will persist. So the more you try to resist that rather than focusing on the Lord, the more difficult it's going to be.
Absolutely.
Well, we're going to go to a break here in a minute. We're going to come back. We'll give you some ideas, too. Some people have asked about sleep apnea and what that is. And so we'll spend a few moments on that. More on sleep in just a minute. Back with Dr. Panettiere, a sleep expert, and the Dr. Linda Mental Show.
Did you know you have a conflict style? Everybody does. Are you a conflict avoider? Maybe you don't avoid, but instead react intensely. Or perhaps you are a great negotiator. Dr. Linda Mental offers a free conflict quiz when you visit her website, www.drlindahelps.com. Click on the picture of her latest book, We Need to Talk. Then have a friend or your partner take the quiz too, and see if you can navigate conflict successfully.
To take the conflict style quiz, click on the cover of Dr. Linda's latest book at drlindahelps.com.
Mother and daughter relationships are powerful, and they impact all our other relationships. Think about it. The way you react with your mom typically is the way you might react with other people. Yet this important bond can be filled with tension when both women try to find their own voice and develop a sense of self. So working through the mother-daughter relationship can be a challenge, but it is so worth the effort. Hi, I'm Dr. Linda Mental, and I would love to help you navigate this important relationship and strengthen it to the best it can be. That's why I wrote, I Love My Mother, But, a book to strengthen the mother-daughter relationship. We all love our mothers, but sometimes we need a little help working through our differences. I Love My Mother, But, available on my website, drlindamental.com, or online where books are sold. Well, welcome back to the Dr. Linda Mental Show, where today we're discussing sleep. Do you get enough sleep? Are there things that stop you from getting sleep? What should you be doing to have what we call good sleep hygiene, which is a term that sometimes we use to help people set up, just like you would set up good hygiene to take care of your body. There's good things you can do to take care of sleep. My guest today is a special guest. He's a sleep expert, and he's a neurologist who's been practicing in the area of neurology and sleep for many, many years, working now with our active duty military. And by the way, Dr. Panettiere, you also served in the Gulf War. So we want to also thank you for your time. He was also one of the, I don't know if you were the chair or the, I don't remember what your title was at the Portsmouth Naval Hospital of Neurology, but we appreciate your service. We thank you for the service that you've given to our military and now working with our military men and women. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's talk about something that everybody wants to know about, and that is snoring. Because I don't think I snore, but maybe I do. But I know my husband does. And if I don't fall asleep before he does, it's really hard to fall asleep with a snore. So tell us what snoring's about, and maybe is there anything we can do if we're in the bed with a snore?
Right. So when people often mention snoring to me, they sort of dismiss it as, doesn't everybody do it? I always tell people that snoring is a medical condition of concern to us in sleep. It implies that there is airway restriction, and as you fall asleep into deeper stages of sleep during the night, your airway will relax, as everyone's does. And if the airway is already somewhat narrow, or if it excessively relaxes in your sleep, then you'll have the speed of the air increase as it passes the narrowed area in the back of the throat, vibrates the soft palate, and that creates the snoring noise. So if someone
why is that a problem? So for the layperson, having that narrowing passage and
right.
what you just described, why is that problematic? So
the problem with that is that implies you have increased effort for breathing at night. You're usually not going to know it, but your brain will sense it. And if it's just simply occasional snoring through the night, not necessarily a problem, but if someone snores loudly, we call it heroic snoring, or if they snore habitually throughout the night, where most of the night they're snoring, you can hear them out in the hallway snoring, then that someone has a significant narrowing that may suggest that they also might have sleep apnea as part of that. It's sort of a continuum, snoring, and then you get shallow breathing, and then you get stops in your breathing.
So is snoring, is it medically serious? I mean, is that going to do something to you if you snore?
Well, if in fact all you did was snore and didn't have any other sleep disorders like sleep apnea with
right.
it, your chance of high blood pressure is 400% higher than simply having that.
So because that's an indicator.
It is an indicator. Again,
okay.
You have increased work of breathing at night, which again, you won't perceive. It's not like you have
you
a mask
feel it.
Over
you don't
it.
Feel it.
Brain notices it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
it tends to drive up the blood pressure, drive up the cortisol levels, which adrenaline
stress.
Levels, which stress hormones, which tend to raise your pressure through the night, which settles down in the morning, and after habitually having that happen, eventually stays through the day.
Yeah, and we know that that kind of repeated stress on the body is not good. So then how does it move? And tell people what sleep apnea is then, because again, that's a term a lot of people have heard. What is that?
Well, the current term we use, sleep apnea is an older term. We currently use the term sleep disordered breathing because some of the events at night are where you fully stop breathing. Other ones are where you're shallow in your breathing. Both of them will drop your oxygen levels. Both of them will disrupt the quality and depth of your sleep. You might think that stopping is worse than being shallow, but they actually are equally disruptive.
Oh.
And so in the cases of sleep apnea or sleep disordered breathing, there'll be recurrent stops or light breathing throughout the night. And many times the bed partner can notice it and will bring it to their attention. And that might prompt them to hopefully see a sleep doctor. There's about 34% of men and 17% of women in the ages of 30 to 70 who have undiagnosed sleep apnea. And that's why it's important to not be dismissed.
So it's a serious condition. And you can sometimes hear, you hear it when you're the other person. You hear that. I can't
Absolutely.
Do it on the radio,
Absolutely.
But it's a sound. I know we picked
right.
that up on my daughter very early, and her tonsils were very enlarged. And
right.
we took her and got her tonsils and adenoids out, and the problem corrected.
Absolutely.
Well, that's all we have time for today. I wish I could have spent an hour with you because there's a lot of questions people have about sleep, but we'll kind of leave it there. We'll put it to rest for today. How's that? So I want to just say many thanks to my guest, Dr. Tony Panettiere, our sleep expert that was here today. And I want to thank our producer, Paul Vandenbosch, who is going to be our last time here until next summer. He's going away on some internship thing that he thinks he needs to do, but he'll be back. So don't worry about that, people. And from all of us here at Faith Radio, we'll talk to you next week. In the meantime, remember, every Saturday we are here doing life together, and it's better when you don't have to do it alone.
Dr. Linda Mintel Show is a production of WWMC Radio, Lynchburg, Virginia.